Welcome back to Racing Pulse. Don't forget, we'll be catching up with Tyler Schiller very, very soon, the Group 1 winning jockey. We'll also catch up with the owner ambassador who pocketed $250,000 thanks to Mr. Brightside winning the All-Star Mile. We'll have the full form preview for Mornington today. Time to catch up now with Ben Mason, though, from Crown Equine Veterinary Services. How are you, Ben?
Morning, Michael. I'm fantastic.
That is good. Always love picking your brain about some veterinary issues. And last time we spoke, you were actually heading up to have a look at the internationals and look after those. But I've just found out that didn't actually come to fruition up there. Gee, it would have been interesting because what we've seen the internationals do up there over this carnival, it once again highlights the fact that those middle distance and staying types have got so much more on our Australian horses.
Is it that, or is it just that they come to the warmer weather? These horses have left a very cold winter in England, travelled the world, and just like most of these athletes, as soon as they hit sort of warmer weather, they seem to almost grow an inch, gain an extra couple of margins in lengths, and they just perform a lot better. Mm. They always do that in England, obviously in the summer, but these horses have come out of their English winter into a very warm, hot Sydney sort of autumn, and have really improved. And I've noticed the ones just down at the Spring Carnival when we have at Werribee, when we have those warm days, you can just see the horses just blooming in front of your eyes. And I just wonder if it's just seasonal changes. Is it going from west to east? We know that there's an increase in testosterone level in horses. It's endogenous in them. If you jet lag yourself between west to east, there's been studies on that. That's a transient thing. So you'd think you'd have an advantage if you were like that. So that's basically just a hormonal change in your body. But that really only lasts for almost a week. So these horses are in quarantine for 2 weeks. So we really question whether it actually makes a difference to their performance or not. But, and William Haggis has done, just with those two, incredible job getting him right.
Yeah,
he certainly
has. So just on that jet lag that you talk about, so the horses obviously have jet lag like humans, do they?
We presume they do. All the studies have shown, yes, they do. That's why we give them fluids when they arrive, just to rehydrate them straight away. But there is a hormonal balance shift in cortisol. There's a hormonal balance shift in testosterone. This is natural in the body already. This is not given by a vet or someone else. This is naturally in your body if you go from one way to the other. And it's the reverse if you go east to west.
Right.
The reverse. So this is just a natural transient hormonal shift if you go from west to east.
So that's
That was published several years ago.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So what do you do in the build-up for a horse that's heading from Australia to Europe then, such as what will be happening, hopefully, with Animo and a lot of the other Aussies heading over for All Ascot?
Oh, I'd go there early, plenty of time. Don't go in there late. So the additive, when you have the opposite direction, you can just fly in late and then race, and it's easy. If it's the opposite, you take your time. You go early. Spend weeks over there adjusting, acclimatizing, getting everything ready and right. That's one thing. Obviously, the horse, remember those spacesuits? I think putting on one on Black Caviar, whether they worked or not. That was, make sure the feet are taped, obviously, just for transport. So losing a shoe, there's two things that can go wrong when you fly a horse from A to B. One, if you lose a shoe and the horse stands on a toe clip, it could be out for a month with a bad bruise and an abscess. The second is obviously pneumonia. And then the flying grooms, which these transport companies have, are amazing. And they ensure the horses get their heads down appropriately to actually graze off the bottom of the actual jet stalls. So therefore, they can release the mucus as fast as possible. And if we do that, therefore, there's no mucus buildup in their lungs, and then they don't end up having pleural pneumonia. So attentive to those sort of factors, and you'll get your horse in one piece when you get there. Then it's hand over to the trainer to see what he wants to do to keep the horse fit, ready for the race.
Speaking of the international horses, there's obviously been a lot of debate and discussion about the CT scans, and New South Wales not implementing those veterinary procedures. And I read during the week that Chris Waller is actually scanning his own horses now to build up a catalogue, a history. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a fantastic idea. If I had a decent horse, especially a Group 1 horse, and a horse that, say, as the stable vet said, oh, we need to medicate its fetlocks, it's got some changes, I would have a CT scan done. I'd have a CT scan done every 6 months. basically, to protect your asset. I remember back in the years ago, StarCraft, when he was racing, we bone scanned him after every race just to make sure he was okay. And that sort of intense, that imaging is there, it's available. And yes, it's some people sort of say, oh, that's too much, you find that too much. Well, if you don't look, you don't know. And if you don't know, then there's no, well, there's no surprises everywhere. Oh, we didn't know that. Well, you could have had the chance to know that, because this technology is actually available now. So to have the CT scans routinely done, just especially of the distal limbs, which 95% of the injuries come from, I think it's an invaluable tool to have. And the problem is we've only got one in Victoria and there's one in New South Wales. And the problem is unless we start installing more of them quite quickly, they're going to be overloaded. Because more people will be using them routinely.
Are we able to get them, or is it
prohibitive? Funding. They're looking to put in another one, I think, in a new Cranbourne design. So one in Mooring is going to go into Cranbourne down. So there's one in, obviously, Werribee at the university, and there's going to be another one at put into Cranbourne. There's one, obviously, at RSC in Sydney, which is it's used. The don't think there's actually one up in Queensland, and I don't think there's actually one in New Zealand. But the technology is available. It's funding. They put one in. It's radiation. So that's the other thing. It's not a dye. We don't have to go, you know, put a dye through the horse. It's literally just an X-ray, three-dimensional X-ray. So you just need power to run these things. It's a very sophisticated computer, but it's just power-driven. There's no other sort of additive you need to put in there to make sure the machine actually works. Like, you need the helium with the MRIs, and you need obviously the nucleotide with the bone scans. The CT is just power, and it's just a three-dimensional X-ray. So yes, once we get them and they're made overseas and they're brought here, we should be putting more in.
So if you have this history, like Chris Waller is wanting to build of his horses, what would that mean for, say, a potential horse like a Durston who was ruled out of a Melbourne Cup? Would you be able to go back and say, hang on, he did have a blemish, but he's raced safely and consistently with this previously? Is that what the plan is, to try and alter a ruling because they have raced with certain blemishes? How would it work?
I think that's... Well, remember, it's a computer program, and you can measure to, like, the half the mil, basically, in size and scope. So if you've seen changes along the way, and let's be totally frank, this is not, look, we're not discussing, oh, it's got a small fragment in the joint and, oh my gosh, it's not going to race. We're not talking about that. Those things can be managed. They can have surgery. They can be managed by the stable vet. We're talking about fractures, like things that can stop a horse in a racetrack and be fatal. So this is where it's, I know it's very emotive, it's a very big subject, but this is where the CT is on a class of its own. It can actually determine if there is a fracture, and there are actually, I've discussed this before, there are certain parameters that they use to determine if the fracture is going to be it's concerning or not. And if it is concerning, I think we have to step back and go, okay, we're not going to race this horse. This is serious. And they can track that, as you just said. So if it does, that fracture line does get longer or wider, yeah, that becomes a real concern. And that horse probably shouldn't be even been ridden. But if it stays the same, or is there something of another consequence, well, we can get different opinions. Then we can say, okay, potentially we can have another MRI on top of that, or yes, why don't we just do another CT in another week's time and see if it actually is there. But what Chris Waller's doing is actually quite clever, because his case is a one in, I know, 1,000. It's a very, very small population for the CTs. But if there is that line ball case, it's a grey area, it's going to give him evidence to suggest that I'm happy to train this horse, and our medical team is happy that this horse is not going to break down. And that is a fantastic position to be in than guessing at the last minute, which they were last year, going, oh, we're not too sure. So having that backup is just is really important and a fantastic feature to have in a horse's medical history. But my question will be, what happens to all these medical histories that we have of these horses? Because these horses sometimes have all this done as three-year-olds, and they end up in an online auction as five-year-olds, disappearing up to Queensland. Where does this imaging go? Does this stay with the horse? Is there some sort of digital wallet? Not at the moment. It doesn't stay with its microchip. There's no database you can tap in and actually say, oh, I've had a CT or an MRI in the past. So we're going to start accumulating quite sophisticated knowledge on every single horse. how do we keep that in a bank somewhere which can be accessible for the future? So people down the line don't go, oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know I had all that sort of expenditure done. Or is that private? Is it a private, basically, consideration just between the owner and the imaging, where the imaging actually happens? Well, that is something I think we need to discuss a bit further.
Well, on a more broader scale, is it now made open and available any veterinary treatment for any horses because they may well be unsold in the future? Or is that, as you say, the medical reports of that individual horse which don't need to be provided when you do sell a horse?
At the moment, they're not provided. It's generally, oh, yes, everything's fine. I mean, I do Hong Kong vettings most weeks, and I ask trainers, has this horse had any medical history? And then the answer is usually, no, it hasn't. And you know that it has. It's had its fetlock injected a month ago, or it's had surgery, because that's actually been, you can actually find that in Racing Victoria. So that transparency is not there at the coalface, but is there a data system we should be having that we can, you know, major, this is not just, you know, but medical histories which are significant going forward, the orthopaedic significance going forward for racehorses, that is. And I think there should be some sort of database. I think England's trying to do that at the moment. I know Hong Kong's pretty easy. Once you're in the club, you can actually see the history of the horse for its entire longevity while it's there. But here we just don't have that system yet. Maybe that's something we really need to start pushing. Maybe it's something already happening in the background. We don't know yet, but it's quite complex. There's a lot of stakeholders need to get involved, obviously, into that. But I think going forward, it'd be a very, very useful tool for managing these horses going forward. You know, yes, they've all got issues. Well, let's manage them properly, because we know what those issues are. We're not guessing from day one when we see them as a six-year-old.
That's a good point. I want to ask you about synthetic hoof filler. I interviewed Paul Snowden last week, and he kind of laughed and scoffed and said, I can't believe that this is even a gear change. It's such a minor thing. What's your thoughts on it? And is it a case-by-case scenario? Because if it is a minor thing, it is, I suppose, in some corners, off-putting for punters if you see synthetic hoof filler has been used. Or is it the amount? And maybe we need a grading when it is reported.
Oh, yeah, right. So has it been used or not is basically what the current system is. And you're suggesting, oh, if we put, say, 2 centimetres of hoof filler on this foot, that's more significant than, say, just a dab on that foot.
Well, Paul Snowden said it shouldn't even be considered a gear change or in the steward's report because it means nothing.
Is it a cosmetic? Is it there for cosmetic reasons? So you're just filling in a slight defect on the side of the hoof wall? Or has the horse had a big sort of defect at the front of its foot and it's missing its normal hoof wall, therefore the filler's going across that just obviously to be a cosmetic and a brace? But I mean, I think if there's wires involved, I think it should be a gear change. I think Paul's probably right. If it's just a filler, as long as the heels aren't rebuilt with using the filler, then maybe if it's just on the dorsal hoof wall and it's just filled in for a cosmetic blemish, that should not be a gear change. But I think if there's the heels have been rebuilt and all this major construction been going on, so it's a quarter crack, and you've used hoof filler to sort of bind that crack together, that should be reported as well. That they're the reportable sort of issues. But I think that there needs a bit more feedback from the main farriers to see what they think as well, who are on the tools every day doing that.
And in the steward's report, and it's been reported from Mick Price and Michael Kent Jr., I'm thunderstruck he suffered heat stress. We see this on hot days. How detrimental is that, and how quick can horses recover from it?
It's very stressful when you see it, that's for sure. So there's different grades of heat stress. There's the grade that the horses are just not recovering as normal post-race. And so there's an increased heart rate and they're increased respiratory rate and they're just panting a lot further. Then you've got heat exhaustion, which you've got a pretty distressed horse. They're hot, they've got a high heart rate and they're looking a bit fatigued, a bit wobbly. So those horses have to be obviously put under cold hose immediately. And then the next category after that is heat stroke, where they become neurological. So they have all those symptoms I've just suggested, as well as they're neurological. Therefore, you can't appease them. You can't just brush them over the eyes and think, you're okay, you're okay. You can't talk to these horses. These horses will collapse. They'll go through fences. They'll drag you across the lawn and they'll flip over. This is a different scenario. This is not very, obviously for the public eye, it's not very, very good at all. But managing those is really difficult because you've got to put them in somewhere outside the public eye, cool them down as fast as you can and get veterinary attention as fast as you can because you've got to sedate them. So there's different realms. I think I'm thunderstruck probably at the middle one. He has hit exhaustion. I think he was attended to very, very quickly and they got that under control. So can he back up? Yes. Is it transient? Yes. They can recover fine. And generally the next day they usually check by the stable veterinarian as well to make sure they've eaten and then they've had everything they need. They usually run a blood test the next day as well to see how their electrolyte balances are. But they can recover perfectly fine and they can go on and race perfectly fine. And heat exhaustion doesn't need to be on just the hot days. It can be on the cooler days as well. If they've got a longer hair coat, you can see these in winter. Mm. I've seen them before, and the neurological versions as well. Mm. So, yes, they have an increased temperature. So the actual temperature of the outside temperatures can be hot, but also you can see these in cooler days. So don't be fooled on a winter's day. If you start seeing a neurological horse, it might be heat stress, and you might have to fix it the same way.
Ben, fascinating as always. Great to catch up. We'll chat in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks very much. Speak to you.
Ben Mason, Director of Crown Equine Veterinary Services.